take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade, setting in the shade. Whether it's hot, whether it's cool, oh, what a spot for whistling like a fool. What a fine day to take a stroll and wander by the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass.
Just as you thought a podcast was getting good, and down the thing it goes. Fish and Frank and Captain Josh Olive here on Fish and Frank's Zone. I don't know. So the name of the show is something. We're here, and we're from Fish and Frank's, and Josh, Captain Josh Olive, is the fish coach. And so you've got Fish and Frank, you got the fish coach. Say hi, Captain Josh.
Hi, Captain Josh.
All right. So anyway, we're going to go over a little bit of fishing stuff here. And one of the things I want to start off with is Josh Unseen hasn't seen these before. They're coming to the tent sale first time. What do you think of these?
Okay. Well, I'm not really quite clear on what. No.
Can you figure out what they are?
Those are interesting. Let's see. We would use those as trailers on a spoon, perhaps.
Spoon, jig,
something along those lines. Baits, yeah.
And let me get one of those.
It's,
for me.
It's like a plastic clothesline clip that's been flattened completely out. That's really weird, man.
I don't think they got an added scent to them. There's some kind of oil in them.
They smell like something. They don't quite smell like plastic.
Yeah, they got an oil in them. They're called otter tails.
What do they taste like?
I haven't tried to taste one. I'm not
that
brave.
Come on, you've got to taste test one. How are you going to know what they are?
What do they call that? Airborne.
Ugh, tastes like plastic. Gross.
Okay, yeah. So this is one you're probably going to have to use a scent with. This is made out of like a fibrous material. Otter tails are a trailer. If some of you people out there are as old as me, you would remember Uncle Josh pork rinds.
Hey, I remember Uncle Josh pork rinds. Nothing and, like a jig and pig, man.
And they're awesome, but they're hard to get anymore. Now, this is a pork rind replacement. And
this is way tougher than a pork rind.
Oh, yeah. This stuff has got a fibrous material in them. I believe they're made up in, what, Jersey or somewhere? Where the heck these made?
It tastes like Jersey.
I don't know. All right. I don't remember where they're made, but they're made here in the U.S. Really nice guy. And they're we're going to be meeting them in person. They're coming to do otter tails at the store here on the tent event day.
No, but this is really cool, though. I like this because with so many of the soft plastics that you want to use as a trailer, especially on a spoon, they're just too big and bulky, and they have too much water resistance. They affect the action of your lure too much. But these are real thin, and I don't think they're going to impact the action all that much other than to add some motion to it, which is what you were looking for in the first place.
Yeah, so, but I think on a, you know, working a jig, they'd be awesome. I think you could even put them behind, like, a regular crankbait, like a Bomber or a Rapala, you know, something, a lure with a lip on them, stick them on the back of there. But I think more conventionally, spoons and jigs, a little trailer that goes out the back, some are curled to give more action, some are kind of tongue depressor shaped, I guess you would call it, but, they add a better sound to your lure sometimes.
And people don't realize...
Let me rephrase that. I'm sorry. They add a different sound to your lure. Not better, but different.
Right. What I was going to say was people don't realize that they are producing sound when they're using a curly tail jig or a paddle tail jig, because you're actually creating those waves in the water, and the fish pick those up with their lateral line and also with their inner ears, and they perceive it as sound. And when you have a big one that has a big wide tail on it.
I don't know. I've never been in that position. So, I mean, you know, I'm sure there's,
well, this
there's
is
probably
different, Frank,
basis for that assumption.
You can
I'm not
buy
in that group.
You can buy a big one here, so it's a whole different thing.
Gotcha.
When you choose a larger one, it creates a deeper, lower pitch sound, which is great for
deeper,
those.
Lower pitch. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. But you can do, like, a paddle tail produces more of a thumping sound, in my estimation, because
right.
the tail goes up and down, creating more of a, you know, boom, 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 boom.
And it carries farther.
So creating a bigger presence in the water than what the lure actually is. Where curl tail, to me, that tail pulsating out, curling in, going out, curling in, going out, would be more along the lines of a smaller minnow.
Right, and it's higher pitched, and the smaller you get it, the more higher pitched it becomes. So when you're looking at lures that have a real narrow split tail on them, and they get just that little sound going on. So, I'm sorry, I can't help
I thought I was the only one who did that. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, I love it. All right, anyway, we got... the curl tail, the paddle tail. Then you have some where the tail swims side to side. The new life target. You've got the egret minnows. The tail swims side to side. I have not come up with a noise for that one yet. Maybe shook, 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 shook. You know, we're going to go with different ones. But by adding these trailers to it, you're literally changing the tones and the sound of the jig and or crankbait and or spoon. So you can add a different sound to it, and which may make it more or less appealing. We hope more, but there is the truth of the matter is it can actually make it less appealing.
Or it might not add to the appeal the way that you want to, because you have to think about these things as sound waves and think about how sound waves are going to carry under different circumstances. A lighter, quieter, higher pitch sound, you need calmer conditions for it to carry at all. You need relatively flat water if the water's real skinny. That's great, because you just want to make a little bit of a ruckus to get the fish's attention, not scare them away with that big boom, 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 boom paddle tail.
And on the other, and here's a point, boys and girls, we're talking about higher pitch and lower pitch tones. And the reason you can picture this in your mind, if you've ever seen, what is that, oscilloscope or just a sound meter in general.
Oscilloscope will work, sure.
You know, what it is higher pitch sounds have a much smaller wave to them. Sound comes out in waves, in vibration waves through the air. And the higher pitch is a very small little wave. The lower bass tones, the wave is much bigger. And
think about when you're in your car on the road and somebody drives by with their stereo thumping. All you hear is the bass coming out of it. And the bigger the bass is, the further away you can hear it from. You never hear the treble that they're hearing inside the car, because those waves just don't get as far. They get absorbed by things. So big tail, big bass waves, travel a longer ways, can be overheard with lots of things going on if there's wave action or wind action or boats going by, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So anyway, now I got another one here. This is called a no-brainer. And it's down in the Keys. They use them a lot for yellowtail. And this is another guy we just picked up. We're going to be carrying his products. He's sending out a bunch of that. And
you know, it's funny. This is a product that I suggested to somebody a while ago, and they said, there's no market for that, so I'm not going to make those.
Yeah, exactly. And so now, we've got a woman and her, what do you say, significant other? The other woman. They love them. They catch all kinds of fish on them. They think it's the greatest thing ever, and they're really amazing people. And they fish a lot. They catch a lot of fish. But they've gone to these, and basically what it is a circle hook with lead molded to the shaft of the hook.
So it's kind of like what a circle hook jig head is supposed to be, except that it'll actually work.
Yeah, it's you put bait on it, and in the Keys, they have these little yellowtail jigs. And the yellowtail jigs in the Keys are either illegally a J-hook with a piece of bait on it, because it's a reef species, you're supposed to use circle hook, or these circle hooks, which are them. Now, the regular yellowtail hook thing, we use as a jig head with like the... what's the name of that little tiny lure that we use them on?
Those little
cream,
fishies.
Little fishies. because the body is so small. It's a crappie body, but the tarpon actually love it. And the little tiny crappie body, but the hooks under normal size, you can't hold anything with their bent wire.
Because it's made for crappie.
Right. But T's Tackle has this little Key West yellowtail jig that has a lead weight on it and a heavy hook. And they're excellent as jig heads and these tiny baits for the tarpon. And when they're schooling up on glass minnows, they just love that little fishy jig body.
Mm-hmm.
So these, though, I don't think you could use them in the same way as an additional jig head. But according to the girls, these things just waylay the fish. I mean, they were, you know, into it enough where I went ahead and bought a line of them. And we're going to be stocking them in the store.
Yeah, I think it would be real tricky to put a plastic body on here because the way the circle is, you just don't have enough straight hook to put that plastic body onto. But for bait, it'll be perfect. And the thing about those key jigs, you know, we think of, you have to use a circle here in the Gulf of Mexico. On the Atlantic side, that's not true.
It's not true on the Atlantic.
Yeah, so when you're over on the Atlantic, then you can certainly fish a J hook for snapper and have no problems whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
So they legally use them there.
I was assuming it was a Florida law.
It is, but it's a Florida Gulf law.
Ah, so it's not a Florida Atlantic law, just
right.
A Florida Gulf law. So once they're 3 miles offshore, they can use whatever they want.
Yep.
But on the Gulf side, you got to go 9 miles out to hit federal waters. On the Atlantic side, you only have to be 3 miles out. So therein lies the difference. Okay, well, I'm glad I was corrected, made to feel foolish right here in the show.
Right, you know, on your show, man.
Well, our show. We're planning on doing this as a team, our show. What the heck
where
was that?
Where'd that come from?
The wrong one? Okay.
Who's controlling these buttons anyway?
I don't know. Yes, he's not much. I got to tell you that. Just not much. All right.
We got to get a guy.
Yeah, we got to get a guy. Maybe we need a girl. You know, somebody with a little sense of order.
Don't care. As long as it's a pro, you take it.
God. I just can't get... I don't know what's wrong with me. Anyway, there's been a lot of stuff going on. Fishing right over the... Since November. Usually November... well, it could start as early as September in Florida. September is kind of the if month. September, October are the 2 months that are iffy. If we get some cool fronts and a little bit of rain, but not a lot, they can be spectacular months fishing. November is usually when we kick off our what you would call winter fishing season, which did not happen this year. The fish never came.
No. Well, and the snowbirds never came either. There was something very strange about that, that everybody seemed to know what was going on, and they just didn't show up the way that we expected them to.
But the fish, the people, everything was off this year.
The birds were off. It was all off.
Yeah, I didn't really see any ducks here until just before Christmas.
Yep.
And usually the ducks are here in October, November, and they were getting plenty of cooler weather up north that should have been pushing them down. But I don't know what actually happened, but September was really iffy. Snook season was good, but not great. And I think it was because we were still getting a lot of rain at that point.
Yeah, that could be it, because that's been different from what we've had in most years. And we do have years where that happens, but it's not supposed to be the normal pattern.
So, going into October, we kept thinking, okay, this month, because we were getting a little bit of cooler weather, and kept thinking, okay, this is going to really kick off. We had no real red tide action. We had a little bit here, patches there, but it wasn't a heavy red tide season. But it could have been properly placed red tides that kept the fish away somewhat. If those red tides hit around the passes and don't allow the fish to come in, not necessarily causing a big fish kill, but, oh, this is uncomfortable, and they turn around and head back into the Gulf instead of trying to go through it. So that might have been the pause for the fish.
And not just for the fish that we all want to catch, but for the bait fish, too. If the bait fish can't come through it, then the bait fish stay out to sea, then maybe the fish are going to stay more out to sea, too.
Now, we saw a lot of that over the end of 2017, where there was patchy red tides all along the coastal waters, a little bit on the intercoastals, very little, if any, up in the harbor. But that might have kept the glass minnows out, might have kept a lot of the food fish from penetrating in, which the fish follow the food fish. And this week, finally, We've seen a bunch of glass minnows come into harbors, other little bait fish and stuff going on. We have massive shrimp populations on the flats. All smaller ones, massive big shrimp in the middle of the harbor and tiny shrimps up on the edges.
The other thing we really have going for us right now, like you mentioned, the red tide never got real heavy, and the last couple of years it has wrecked the mullet as they were heading out to spawn. And that didn't happen this year. We did have some mullet get killed, but most of those fish survived to breed. And the other thing that we've been seeing out there in the shallow part of Charlotte Harbor is millions and millions of teeny tiny little mullet, little inch to inch and a half mullet.
Now, what's really important about this is we go in South Florida by the bait, and whether it's glass minnows, tiny mullet, thread fins, white bait, all these little bait fish are the canary in the coal mine, we would say.
Definitely. If you're going to have a healthy bait fish population out there, a healthy game fish population is almost certain to follow. And vice versa, if your bait fish kind of sucks, guess what? Your fishing kind of sucks.
And you can take that to even temperatures. What we've seen over the last few years and is how temperatures, fish like king mackerel is probably the easiest example. They like 68 to 72 degree water. So if the water is below 68, those fish are all migrating south. They're heading to the Keys, Cuba, all these parts in the southern waters where the water's going to be a little bit warmer. Now, as the water starts warming up too much, getting over that 70, 75 degree mark, because they like 68 to 72, once they start hitting about 75, they start pushing north. And you can literally follow these fish up as the water temperature changes. Right now, it's still below 60 up in Pensacola, so they're not going to be that far yet. But Tampa is hitting in that mid-60s level. So these fish are going to start coming by the coast here any day. The water's getting to the point where they're going to want to start pushing north.
And having a good, healthy population of bait fish in our area will encourage them to stick around a little bit longer. Because even as the water starts to get outside of their preferred temperature range, if the feeding is good, then they will tend to stick around for a few degrees longer than they otherwise might.
Actually, I'm going to go that one step in the same direction, but a little bit further. What we've seen is that as the water warms up, as we get closer and closer into summertime, June, July, the temperature difference between Naples and Pensacola up in the Panhandle is 1 or 2 degrees. I mean, it's very little difference. The Panhandle, which historically is much cooler than us, now has as warm a water as we do. And once the whole entire Gulf Coast is the same temperature, then the fish will start to migrate around looking for areas that have the most food, most availability of food, you know, conditions which go past temperature because it's all the same, so they're going to go looking for food. We have seen several times where we have excellent king mackerel fishing in the summer where historically over time they were never here. We'd get them going north, we would get them going south, but we've had these phenomenal month-long, 2 months-long, 3 month-long king mackerel bites. And I think it's based because the temperature is the same all the way up and down after a certain point, and then they just go looking for food.
And I think that makes sense to some degree anyway. I mean, the folks who go way offshore here will tell you that there are kingfish out here all the time, because you get into a certain depth of water and you can find the right temperature range for them. They don't usually hang out in those areas because there's not as much food for them there. Kingfish tend to feed closer to the surface most of the time when they're traveling, when they're acting pelagic. Around here, we do see them around the reefs sometimes just because that will accumulate a larger quantity of bait fish. But when you get those years where you do have sea surface temperatures that are really warm like that throughout the Gulf, those fish are going to be all over the place. And if you happen to have abundant bait fish in an area where the sea surface temperature is, let's say, 79, which is a little warm for them, they will come into that area to feed. And then they'll retreat back to the more comfortable temperatures at depth and a little bit farther out the next day.
So they're no different than people. Our snowbird population, the people who live down here in the winter and up north in the summer, they're doing the exact same thing. They're going for the most comfortable temperatures, the easiest living conditions, rather than putting up with minus 10 and 3 feet of snow. They just stay in Florida for the summer.
Right. And it's not that they can't take those temperatures. It's just that they don't like them. It's like if I'm driving down the road in my air-conditioned truck running at 72 degrees, which is real comfortable for me, and then I see a taco stand, but it's 98 degrees outside and I got to get out of the truck in the 98 degrees to get a taco, I will get out of the truck in the 98 degrees, get myself a taco, stand the hot temperatures, and then get back into the nice, cool, comfortable truck where I wanted to be in the first place.
It's the taco theory of fish. We've got it down now, folks. If you're going to think like a fish, you have to think about getting a taco.
That's right. That is exactly right.
And,
man, I love a kingfish taco, too.
I actually, that would probably be pretty good.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that would actually sounds pretty good. Okay, I'll quit picking on you and defer to the taco theory of fish. We're going to pick out and we're going to be talking about some of our favorite lures because right now trout's kind of an almost year-rounder. So we're going to talk a little bit about what our favorite trout stuff is and what we would like to use for trout, but we really haven't. So we're going to get in with that. Okay, proving once again I'm the most insensitive person on the planet.
I have no comment.
Can't even.
No commentary whatsoever.
Yeah, I know. All right. Now, the thing is I'm going to let you start off, and we're talking about speckled sea trout. Now, this would work for silver trout, sand trout, spotted sea trout, and things that you can catch them on a shrimp, and you can catch them on a white bait, you can catch them on bait. But sometimes you just want to get a little more involved in your fishing. Is bait better or live or artificials better? Well, I would say artificials cover more territory and bait does a spot better.
I would agree with that.
But for what we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about some artificials for it. And let's start off with one that you've caught sea trout with, Josh. What lure have do you like to catch sea trout with?
Okay, we're going to start with my absolute top number one favorite choice for sea trout fishing, which is a DOA Cal.
A DOA Cal?
DOA Cal Shadtail.
Yes.
And this particular one that I have picked is the new Penny color, which is not always my favorite color, but which is a pretty good choice. It's hard to go wrong with new Penny.
All right, now we're going to rate this on a scale of like 1 to 10 for a newbie. If somebody was just had never thrown a lure before, would this be a good choice for them to begin with?
If I can spend 3 minutes with them and show them what to do and how to use it, yes, it's an absolute fantastic choice for them.
Let's say they don't live here and they don't have access to us.
Right.
If they just walked into a store somewhere and went, okay, I'm going to buy this, good choice, 1 to 10, great beginner or not?
Well, 1 being a really good one for a beginner and 10 being really lousy, or
no,
which
I'm
way are we
say
going?
10 being really good and 1 being really lousy.
I'll go with a 6 on this one because there's a lot of different ways that you can fish these Cal shadtails and any other soft plastic shadtail that's out there. If you just rig it on a jig head and swim it through the water, or rig it on a swim bait hook and swim it through the water, you will catch fish. You won't catch as many fish as if you use a twitching, pausing, darting, dashing, fast and slow type retrieve.
Okay, I'm going to go much lower on the scale with that, and Mark Nichols, one of my dearest friends, but I'm only going to give it a 3 or a 4 for a beginner because most people don't know how to put a jig head into it. I teach people to put jig heads into those literally every day. I was just doing it right before we started the show.
I saw you.
And so if you have access to someone who can show you how to put the jig head into it, it's literally one of the best lures on the market. But not everybody has access to that friend or to somebody at Fish and Frank's to show them how to put the jig head in. So you're thinking it's a 6 because it is so versatile, but I'm thinking it's a 3.5 because you do have to know how to put the jig head into it.
Well, let's be fair here. We need to define beginner. Are we talking about somebody who's never thrown a lure?
No, fished is different than not throwing lures. I fished for many years and never threw much for lures, and then one day I just started throwing lures because I got into it. And I deal with people every day who love to fish but have never thrown a lure and would really like to start.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, then I'll give it a 5.5.
And I'm good with that. And the reason we're doing this, so this averages out as a 5. So, okay. On mine, one that I've caught a lot of trout with, and I'm going to go to the old Arbogast Hula Popper.
Cool bait.
A Hula Popper, if you lived up north, it's well known in freshwater for catching fish. The reason I like the Hula Popper is it stays on the surface, and you give a little short jerk or snap to the rod, and it creates a blunk sound, a splash, and that tells fish that something there is either escaping or something's trying to eat something. And it's a very simple lure to use. Have you used the Hula Popper?
Yes, I have. And I like your choice a lot, especially for people who are bait fishermen, because they're probably familiar with using a popping cork. And what this is a popping cork, basically, without the shrimp underneath it. Works kind of the same way, makes kind of the same sound, attracts fish the same way.
Well, I think the Hula Popper is so versatile because you go freshwater, saltwater, and what makes it so easy of a topwater to use, it has an exaggeratedly much bigger than average popping mouth to it. A lot of the poppers, it's so small that you really have to know how to keep your rod tip low to the water, give that hard snap to it. With this, if you jerk it at all, it will usually produce a sound for you.
And if you don't jerk it with a nice sharp snap, it still produces sound, just a different sound.
Yeah, it'll create a splashing as you gurgling is just if you drag it forward and not really pop it. So, honest, I'm going to give this, and the weird thing is, it should have a much higher number. This should be like an 8 on beginner easiness, but I know so many people look at it and they throw it out. It sits on the surface and they think, what, it isn't working, what's wrong with this lure, it's not swimming, you know what I mean?
So well, if they're just trying to reel it in, then yeah, you're gonna have a problem with it.
So I'm really gonna drop this back into the 4 category, because you need to know that it does pop, that you should give it a jerk, not just a reel in, and that it is going to stay on the surface. So I'll go as high as a 5 on that.
Yeah, I was prepared to give it a 7 if it said somewhere on the back of the package what you were supposed to do with it, but it does not. So I'll stand with a 5 also.
Yeah, and it's because topwater lures, not that they're hard to use, but if you really don't understand anything about lures, the way a beginner person, somebody who's never used a lure before, the Hula Popper's awesome. But if you have no idea what it is, you have no idea what it is. So you'll probably buy it and put it back in the box because you think it's broke because it won't swim.
Right. So we're continuing with lures that we have used and that we have caught fish on.
Yes.
So my number 2 on that is the DOA Deadly Tandem.
And in my opinion, the number 1 best way to catch trout.
It's really hard to talk about trout fishing without talking about tandem rigs at some point, especially when you're talking about beginners. And the awesome thing about this is that it's pre-rigged in the package. All you have to do is be able to tie a knot to attach this swivel. And that's really it. Make it, cast it out there, and start reeling it in. That's all you need to do to start catching fish.
All right, the big thing about a DOA tandem, I mean, the thing that's so huge, it should be so simple, is you open the pack, here's 2 jigs there, and you have the line there. And I've literally had people come in, well, I cut that leader off because I make my own leaders. And the great part is you can cut it apart and it still works great as a single curl tail jig. A little pricey just for one curl tail. You can buy a bag and put the whole thing together yourself for a lot less money. But the idea behind this is the chasing action. 2 curl tail jigs, one following the other, you cast them at the same time, you undo the leader, tie your line to the swivel, and throw it out. And this goes back to, I think, one of the reasons the people in the store are so popular with people, is they take a minute to say, now remember, take it out of the package, undo it, say tie your line here, throw both of them at the same time. And I think more tackle shops should do that. I know I'm not trying to bash other tackle shops, but I know people have bought them, and I think it's the assumption part on people who know how to fish that somebody actually understands that you're throwing them at the same time.
You know, it might be worth mentioning to Mark, who I know that you're friends with, that he has a lot of blank space here on the back of this piece of cardboard that's in here where he could print, don't cut these apart, throw them both together, maybe a little pictogram showing how it's done. That would make it for sure 11 for beginners.
Yep. But as it is right now, I'm going to give it a 7 because most people have enough common sense to see that there's a leader and a swivel that you should just tie to it. But I would give it, like you say, a 10 or 11 because it is one of the best lures in the world. But keep in mind, for the most effectiveness, to really get it to work good, you need to jig the rod up and down in a straight vertical motion. Start reeling, lift your rod tip, say start from 9 o'clock and go to about 10:30, maybe 11, back down to 10, and then up to 11:30, giving it that double darting up. Then as from 11, you drop your rod tip back down to 9. What that does is up, and then falling down. And that's a bait fish that have been chased out of the grass and go up to avoid the predator, and then going back down in the water column to go back and hide in the grass again. So it's being chased up out of the grass, going back to hide in the grass. That is amazing effective.
And it works really well with the single, and it works doubly well with the double. Not only because you have two lures there, but also because fish really like when their prey is distracted by something else. And if you got two little fish that are out there involved with chasing each other, then neither one of them is really paying attention to what's going on around them. So that big predator feels like I can just get in there and grab them both.
Okay. So,
and by the way, I'm going to give this a 9 because I have more confidence in even the beginner anglers that they're going to tie it the right way.
And I'm not going to dispute that, but I'm going to say, you know, as long as you know, if you're listening to the show, you know, you take that off and you tie it. So you're going to do great with it. It's going to be a 10 or an 11. But for just somebody walked in the store and bought it, I'm still dropping it down a couple points for that. My next one that I catch trout on a lot, and it's another topwater. Now, the reason I'm doing so many topwaters is I absolutely love to see trout hit topwaters. You get the hit, you feel the strike, you get to see and hear the strike, not just, you know, okay, I'm fighting a fish. It's the before, during, after, it's the entire experience.
I'm not going to argue with you at all, except okay. I will point something out in regards to topwaters when I get to my next bait, but go ahead with your thing.
Now, the Smithwick Devil Horse is two items in one. And one of our captains, Captain Carl, has come up with this, and it's unbelievably effective. I've taught more people to use topwaters on the Smithwick because whether you give it a sharp jerk or you just kind of reel it in or you just give it some pulls, it has two props, one on each end, lays flat on the surface. I think, I think people would, I'm not sure, but I think they'd be a little annoyed because it stays on the surface and they don't realize that fish will hit the surface, a very beginner. But it's the one topwater that if the fish hits it, I usually get a connection to it. It does have three treble hooks on it, so you have to be very careful. I highly recommend you pinch the barbs down on all three of the treble hooks. Just crush the barbs up against the shank so they're no longer a barbed hook, mostly for your finger safety than the fish, because the fish, they get stuck by, you know, stingrays, and they eat blue crabs, which are pinching them and all that. They're kind of made to heal very quickly right around that member, you know, the
membrane in the mouth.
Yeah,
and I'll agree with that, but the triple trebles can be difficult on fish because it's not that uncommon for you to hook a fish in the eyeball or something with one of those extra treble hooks that's out there swinging around. I'm not a huge fan of triple trebles.
I haven't had that much with the Devil Horse. I have more with the ones with two hooks on them, more of that. It seems to be more space between the mouth and the, you know, like where the eyes are or the gills or something like that. With the three, for some reason, the one's a little closer and the other one's a little further away. I don't have that with the Devil Horse in particular, so I have much less of that. And I think it has to do with the spacing of it. So I'm still going to stand by the Devil Horse with that. But phase two of the Smithwick Devil Horse, take the hooks off. Get rid of the hooks. Use it as a popping cork. unbelievably effective. Whether it's for redfish, snook, trout, any fish on the flats, even out in deeper water, if you're going to use a popping cork, you can literally take the hooks off the devil horse or even leave them on, but the problem is it gets tangled with the line. So you could leave, like, say, the front treble hook on and get rid of the bottom two, but I use it as a handle lifting them up. So I originally thought I wanted to leave the hooks on there, and then I said, no, it's too easy. I'm getting them on the... what we're putting below it is a curl tail, a very lightweight 16th ounce curl tail jig, a shrimp on a hook, any kind of bait suspended the same way as you would a popping cork, but with a devil horse as the popping cork.
So what you actually have is kind of a hybrid rig. It's kind of like a popping cork rig, but it's also kind of like the tandem rig, because you've got a following situation. You've got something going along behind something else when you're using an artificial, and you can certainly fish it that way, or you can fish it like you would fish a popping cork if you've got a shrimp or something underneath it and rely on the fish to find either that piece of bait or the silhouette underneath of it. Both of those will work.
So I'm going to give this a very high rating, because if you pull it, you reel it, you jerk it, whatever you do, it usually will find some fish for you. Now, the caveat always being to the top water lures is fish don't have eyelids. Fish don't have eyelids. That's a simple fact. So without eyelids, can you squint into the sun and look directly up? So on a cloudy day, they're going to work good. Early morning, late in the evening, all night, they're going to work good. But that middle of the day from, like, say, 10 to 2, I don't know. What is that?
That's Benny Hill music.
Is that your phone?
Came from. No, my phone has no Benny Hill on it whatsoever.
Yeah, my phones don't have Benny Hill music. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, there's one going off here in the studio somewhere.
Okay.
But fish don't have eyelids, so that middle of the day from, say, 10 to 2 o'clock, actually 10 to 3 o'clock, I would actually say, is probably the least good time for top waters, excepting if it's kind of a cloudy day. If you got cloud cover, you know, the fish can look up, see the bait. I think it's just hard for them to see them up there.
Right. And what I find, too, is that when you're dealing with deeper water, that's much more important. When you're in a shallow water area where the fish are able to look out more horizontally and see your bait, then it doesn't matter quite as much. And sometimes we do have those days where the trout will be in 2 to 2.5 feet of water all day long.
Okay. So I'm going to go with that. The one thing now about the Smithwick, the Hula Popper, lures like that. Do you have a top water there that you're picking?
I do.
All right, what do you got?
Well, we didn't actually give that number rating, so would you care to give the Smithwick a number rating?
I'm going to go 8.
You're going to go 8?
Yeah,
I was going to go with a 10 on that one as far as ease of use, because there's really nothing that you can do wrong with it.
The only reason that I went with an 8 was because, again, the frustration of people who have never used a lure, not understanding that it doesn't dive, it sits on the top. And believe it or not, you know, after all these years, I hear people, oh, I got one of those, it doesn't work. Well, what's wrong with it? Well, it stays in the top, it won't do anything. Okay.
Gotcha.
All right. So generally, for me, top waters are only going to get about an 8.
Okay.
Because...
Well, this next top water that I have here is going to get a low rating for sure for what we're talking about, but it is one of my absolute favorite trout lures. You mentioned the topwater strike. I love the topwater strikes. And the lure that I normally use is a Head and Super Spook Jr. And I got a bunch of different colors that I like for trout. Chartreuse and black are high up on my list, and it comes with both chartreuse with a black head and black with a chartreuse head. Both of them are fantastic and work wonderfully. The reason this one is going to get a really low rating is because you have to work it a pretty specific way to get fish interested in it. You have to do what's called walking the dog. And
I wonder why it's walking the dog. I mean, you know, out of all the random things, I'm going to have to actually try and research that phrase.
Well, because you wouldn't walk a giraffe, would you?
I guess not. Okay, well, that's at least a start to answer the question. But, can you imagine walking your dog, jerking his leash? You know, come on, jerk, work, come on, jerk. You're constantly jerking and twitching that. It's a continuous.
Yeah, the ASPCA is coming for you, buddy.
Yeah, so that's where I have the hard time with the walk the dog. I understand you're bringing it back to you in a steady retrieve, but you're literally jerking that rod tip continuously, making it the... as you jerk the rod back, it whips the front of the lure around. As you, the rod moves forward motion, it creates some slack. As you jerk it back, it snaps the lure the other way, creates slack, snap the lure the other way, creates slack, snap the lure.
And I've tried a lot of different ways to explain to somebody how to walk the dog without actually showing them how, and I have yet to have somebody be successful in walking the dog without me showing them how to do it. And in most cases, it involves actually standing behind them and holding their hand like they're doing a golf swing and saying, this is the motion that you want to get. This is what you want to do.
Well, I start people off. Now, if you're out there and you want to get into a Zara Spook situation, now, Zara Spooks were the first one. Then you have the Top Pup from Mirror, you got Skitter Walks from Rapala, you've got the, why can't I remember the name of that Yozuri one?
I don't know.
But anyway, and one I'm going to pick. I've got one of my picks. It's a PT, and I'll explain what that means in a minute. But if you're right-handed, what I would like you to do is put your hand on top of your head and then put your left hand on your stomach. Now, make your left hand go around in a circle while patting up and down motion the top of your head. So rubbing your belly and patting your head is the exact same motion you use for working a Zara Spook style, walk the dog style topwater. That's the best way to get an habit. So when nobody's looking, just put your hand on top of your head and start patting it. Patting your head. Now, at the same time, you're patting your head, and now you're rubbing your belly around in a circle. It's like you're reeling in. So you're working the rod, boom, 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 jerking it, little slow jerking motions, and then you're reeling in. So that's just like rubbing your belly.
Now, I will give you guys a pointer, which is that if you're trying to walk the dog and you're having a real hard time with it, a lot of it can have to do with the way that you're holding the rod. What I do is I take my right, and I'm right-handed, so I take my right pointer finger and I lay it alongside the rod and I use it to push on the rod and I bounce the butt off of my forearm.
You're literally tapping your finger against the side of the rod to
right.
help create that boom, boom, boom.
Now, I'm never losing connection, so it doesn't look like I'm tapping it, but I'm tapping it.
No, I actually, my finger comes away from the rod when I'm tapping it.
And there's lots of different ways to do it. And the thing about this is that the motion that you're looking for is that side to side as it comes back in. But what really catches fish is not necessarily that straight up side to side motion the whole way back to where you're standing. It's casting it, making it walk for 8 or 10 feet, and then stopping it and letting it sit. And letting it sit for sometimes 30, 45 seconds before you tap, tap, and let it sit and just wait. It takes patience to fish this thing. And so for those reasons, I would give this a 2 when it comes to it being a beginner lure. But
I would
there's
give it a 1.
Well,
yeah.
I'm going to give it a 1, but that's because there's another reason that we haven't even discussed yet, which is common to all topwater baits.
What's that?
The number one reaction that people have when a fish explodes on their topwater lure is to jerk it away from the fish. And
exactly.
If you do that, guess what? You don't catch any fish at all.
Here's the thing. People always say, oh, look how quick animals are. Snakes darting and striking at people. And people can literally grab a snake while it's darting in many cases. If they're sitting there ready, watching with cobras and other stuff, they can literally grab them by the back of the head. And as fast as a snake, maybe even faster. And the problem is you see the strike and jerk. You ever notice, like at night, you go into the bathroom, you flick the switch, and then you can literally feel the pause between when the light comes on and you flick the switch.
Mm-hmm.
And you're literally almost waiting for the light to come on because you flick the switch and, okay, nothing. All right, there it is. And humans are actually pretty quick. So you can see the strike and jerk the lure out of its mouth before then. One time, remind me, I want to get back to that point, but you picked the chartreuse and white Zara Spook?
I picked the straight chartreuse one,
okay.
Because there wasn't a chartreuse and black one on the wall.
All right, I picked the chartreuse and white DOA PT7. It means poodle excrement.
Poodle turd, Frank. That's what it says, poodle turd.
All right, well, I didn't know if I should be saying that.
You could say that.
Okay. All right, but it's basically a very soft body lure. It's kind of hollow. It's just it's a very soft Zara Spook style. Works great on the trout and stuff. I will add one thing. When you said you want to stop the lure, Now, I walk the dog, getting the head of the lure to thrash back and forth for a bit, pause it, but I'm only pausing for, you know, a couple of seconds, and then I make it go in a serpentine S pattern. Then I pause it, and then I walk it again. But I mix up letting the lure go side to side in an S pattern, serpentine it around, then pause it again, and then violently thrash the front of it back and forth, pause, serpentine, you know, and I mix those type of things up to get him more interested, because I think animals are more like something going across the surface of the water. If it's in a big hurry or escaping a predator, is going to have one action. If it's just kind of coming across leisurely, it would have a different motion. So I'm kind of mixing all those things up.
And that makes sense. You know, if you, and not that I've ever done this, but if you take a lizard and throw it out in the water and you watch it run, walk its way back to shore, it's a very frantic, scampering motion that it has coming back in. Whereas if you watch a snake swimming across the water, usually they're much more deliberate about it. So there's lots of different patterns for things moving across the surface of the water. And you've got to find which one the fish happen to be responding to that day.
Yeah, well, that's exactly kind of why I'm doing so many different patterns with it. Some days I find that that S pattern, when you're learning to walk the dog, you can do it in a much softer manner and literally get it to form a serpentine S pattern, like a snake going across the water, or a violent thrashing motion, or any degrees thereof of the two. But the DOA PT, I've used it, but I've only practiced with it in a canal, and it's a little more difficult to work, but I really like the fact I can throw it right up against the trees, because it comes with a weedless worm hook, and I take, pull a little bit of the lure forward and just snag just the point of the hook. It allows me to get it in heavier cover as a weedless bait rather than multiple treble hook bait.
Now, the other cool thing about that PT is that because of the way it's weighted, and it's a short little thing, it's what, 2.5 inches long, something like that?
3, yeah.
Because it's so small and the way that it's weighted, you can get that thing to swing almost within its own body length. So if you have an area that you want to fish a topwater bait, but it's a small area and you think that, well, you know, if I throw my Super Spook in there, once I've gotten, you know, 6 or 10 back and forths, it's going to be outside of the strike zone. With that PT, I can keep it in the strike zone much longer and get a lot of motion out of it, other than, I mean, there's no other topwater that will do what it does.
Okay, pick one that
before we walk away from topwaters, we didn't say what you should do when the fish is striking on that
bait. And you're right. Now, you have brought up this point before, and Captain Josh, the fish coach, has reminded me, trout hit by sound. And when you pop a lure, you make the lure splash, they're keyed in on that splash. So it's not uncommon for trout to hit where the lure was rather than where the lure is.
Right, but they're coming for it. They'll get to it if it's still there when they get there. So the key and important thing to do when a fish comes up and tries to hit your bait is to, number one, stop it. Just stop. Don't jerk the rod. Don't keep walking it. Stop. And stop for about 2 seconds.
I'm sorry. That was... Stop it.
Well, that's exactly how you got to tell them.
Come on. Okay.
They need to hear that nagging voice
stop
in their
it,
head saying,
you.
Stop it.
Yeah, stop it, darn you. Okay.
So
I'm going to go to lower octave on that.
Yeah. All right. So just stop it for just about 2 seconds and then start walking it again. So the fish is either going to come up and whack it in that 2 seconds, or as soon as it starts moving again, he's going to whack it, or he's going to trail it and come after it again. But you got to just stop. And don't try to pull on it until you feel the fish swimming away with your lure. That's when you want to start to pull back.
That was the point, the critical need-to-know information. When you're using a topwater, the hardest thing to do is when you see the strike, freeze. Don't move. Just hold very, very still and wait for the fish to bend the rod. Wait for you till you feel the weight of the fish on it. And then, excuse me, set the hook and start fighting a fish. If you go with the visual reaction of the strike, you're going to miss the fish. So see the strike, freeze, feel the weight, and then fight your fish.
Yeah, don't even try to go with the visual cue of, well, my lure disappeared, so I know it must be in his mouth. Forget that. Go by feel.
Perfect. All right. Pick one that you have not used, but you would like to.
All right. One that I have not used, and one that you had mentioned to me a while ago, and I really have no reason for having not tried this except for sheer laziness, is the Rapala Ripstop.
I got the same thing. The Rapala Ripstop. I haven't used it on trout yet. I've caught gazillion peacock bass, largemouth bass with it. I caught a little snook with it. Never used it on a trout yet.
I haven't even played with it. I feel ashamed to admit that, but it's true. But it looks like it would be an awesome little trout bait.
Well, I mean, the Rapala Ripstop is a wonderful one to teach people crankbaits, because you can twitch it and pause it and do everything that us people who do a lot of lures do with a lure, or you can simply reel stop, crank it stop. And just by turning the handle of the lure, you do three crank stop, one crank stop, two crank stop, and it will catch fish. You don't even have to know how to twitch it or, you know, do the fancy stuff with the rod tip. You can simply do it by reeling it. So that's...
I like the idea anyway.
It's absolutely awesome. The only problem I have with the Rapala Ripstop, one of my new favorite lures, is the back lip. It has a lip on the front of the lure to take it under the water, but it has a little tiny lip on the back of the lure to add to the action. So you can just reel this in on a slow, steady retrieve. It'll catch fish. Trust me, I know. But that little lip tends to break off.
Now, what I will say is I'm going to give this a couple of extra points from wherever we would have gone, because there are specific instructions on how to fish this thing on the back of the box.
So I'm giving this one a flat-out 10 for a beginner, because if you can throw it out and reel it in, you'll probably catch fish with it.
Yeah, I have no disagreement with that.
So the Rapala Ripstop, one of the best lures to start fishing lures with. I'm going to go with one that I came up with the idea because it was so much like another bait. You have to put your own jig head into it. But now I have been rigging this Texas style for redfish for people. Got the reports back. I haven't been able to try it myself. It's been catching a lot of trout. It's been catching a lot of redfish. And that is the Strike King Rage Tail Crawdads. These Rage Tail Crawdads came onto my radar when I was having a curl tail jig has one tail on it, but you can get a twin tail curl tail that has two curl tails on it. And they were very, very popular 15, 20 years ago, but because of not as many people are using them, the color selection has gone way down. And I could not find the colors people wanted in the curl tails. So I said, hey, this is a curl tail. The two crawdad arms or claws actually are like big curl tails, and if you swim it through the water lightly jigging it, the trout just go crazy on this thing. But it was Captain Carl who found out that jigging it with a jig head on the bottom for redfish, hopping it up with the Rockport Rattler, letting it fall back down and letting it sit, the coffee scent on this, the redfish are beating them up. They're really doing good on the redfish, and it makes sense. I think it appears kind of like a craw, like a crab.
It makes perfect sense, and it's not because I don't think, anyway, that it looks too much like a crab, but it looks a lot like another very important prey item that most people never even think of out there on the flats, which is a pistol shrimp. You know, look at a pistol shrimp if you ever have a chance to, or, you know, look one up online. Look up a snapping shrimp, and it looks very much like a crawdad, and it looks very much like this rage tail, and they're very abundant out there on the flats. They are a common forage item, especially for redfish. Now, trout do eat them, not as many as redfish do, but I think that the trout are eating it more because it's moving and it's alive, and they're just feeding on whatever they can. I think the redfish go for it because it specifically imitates one of their most common prey items.
All right. So kind of to sum it up, there's so many different things you can use for trout back on the flat, so many different techniques, from bouncing along up and down to top waters to crankbaits. Any last thought on, I mean, we went over Mirage's stuff, so any last thoughts on that?
Well, there is one other thing that I'd like to say about trout, and it has to do with their biology. As trout get larger, they tend to feed much more on fish. So if you really want to catch big trout, focus on things that imitate fish more than that imitate crustaceans, and that's much more appealing to those larger fish.
All right, so the bigger trout, more fish, less crustacean, more trout, probably more crustaceans. But Fish and Frank's here. That's Captain Josh Olive, the fish coach.
Fishcoach.net.
Fishcoach.net. A phone number you want to sneak in there?
941-276-9657.
And I'm Fish and Frank, and we are Fish and Franks, and fishandfranks.com. Thanks for listening, guys. We really appreciate it. Catch you on the next Fish and Franks.
I'm sick. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer, and telling lies. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with the guys. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with the guys.
First time we did it, I was scared to death. She snuck out in that cotton dress. Jumped on in and we drove to the lake. Put her hand on my knee and said, I can't wait. I had everything we needed in the bed of my truck. Turns out my baby loves to fish. She wants to do it all the time. Early in the morning, in the middle of the night. She's hooked and now she can't get enough. Man, that girl sure loves to fish.
Lazy yellow moon coming up to tonight, shining through the trees. Crickets are singing and lightning bugs are floating on the breeze. Baby, get ready. Across the field where the creek turns back by the old stumble road, I'm gonna take you to a special place that nobody knows. Baby, get ready. By the river.